Present.
Vice Chair Wade.
Present.
Commissioner Baer.
Present.
Commissioner Reed.
Present.
Commissioner Sutton.
Present.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do you all please stand in joining me in pledging allegiance to the flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We're still having technical difficulties, but we're going to go ahead and start, and hopefully it'll be ready. Under the items tonight, old business, we have none. So, and moving to new business. Appointment of Cottonwood Citizen Representatives to the Airport Noise Working Group.
Excuse me, Chair.
No, I'm sorry.
Chairman, approval of the minutes?
Yes. Popped right over that, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Don't know what that says. Well, I do. Gentlemen, have you had an opportunity to take a look at the minutes from the February 21st meeting?
Yes.
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 Any additions, corrections?
Make a motion. We approve them as written.
And second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Minutes have been approved. We already know about old business. Now, new business. Appointment of Cottonwood Citizen Representatives to the Airport Noise Working Group. Last meeting, we interviewed three gentlemen for positions on the committee. And gentlemen, I move to appoint Carl Walk, Joe Bob Grisham, and Robert Rothrock to serve on the Airport Noise Working Group as Cottonwood Citizens Representatives. Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
They have been approved. The gentlemen are now committee members. Okay, we don't have the landing fee presentation ready yet. Great honk. And we don't have airport manager's report, or are you ready, Jeff?
Yeah, Commissioner, I'd recommend right now is we skip over this until we can figure out what the issue is with Zoom. And if you want to go on to, I'd say, maybe the old business with the manager's report, I can do that in the meantime.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and do that? The airport manager's report.
And again, commissioners and members of the public, I do apologize for the technical difficulties we're having with the Zoom meeting. And the commissioners, are there any questions or anything I can expand upon on the airport manager's report?
I don't have any at all.
Excuse me, do we need to go back to number three?
We'll go back to that as soon as Zoom figured out.
Okay.
Hold on, let me try to...
No comments, gentlemen?
None.
Yeah, Commissioner, just as an update, since the agenda was put together, we did receive notice from ADOT that the pre-bid meeting for the pavement preservation project for the runway is scheduled for March 28th. And I did receive notice from ADOT last week that subject to ultimate approval by the Budget of Council and acceptance for the grant, the fiscal year 25 Phase 1 obstruction mitigation grant amount of $500,000 is being offered to the city. So,
wait, is that for the taxiway?
No, this will be obstruction mitigation. The taxiway is still out in the future. That's going to be an FAA. This is the part of our ADOT submittals. So this will be for next fiscal year. They were just asking us if we want to accept the grant. We said yes, ultimately subject to final approval by council of the budget and council accepting the grant. So if future council wants to turn it down, they can also do that. So we're saying that tentatively yes, but we'll see what happens. Okay, then moving on to the operations and noise abatement report. Can I expound upon anything?
Mr. Wade has a question.
Please, Jeff.
Mr. Tripp, would you clarify for me?
And Commissioner, can you please speak in the microphone?
Thank
this
you.
Discussion we had previously on the open meeting law,
mm-hmm.
when you published the agenda for the meeting, is this published also that the general public can see your report?
Yes, Commissioner. Everything in that packet is published to the city webpage, is
so
publicly available
out
for everybody.
To people that are interested in the meeting.
Correct. Okay. That is a public document. That is a bill for everybody that wants to go onto the city webpage.
And so if somebody wants to come to the meeting and talk about a specific issue on your report, they can do that now.
Again, Commissioner, as I've said, that is a legal question, and I am reaching out to our legal counsel. I am not an expert on the meeting laws, so I am trying to get an answer to your question.
Okay, well, I brought it up last meeting. It'd be good to clarify it. Because
and that was 2 weeks ago, Commissioner.
I have open meeting.
I understand, Commissioner.
Okay.
You do understand that the last couple of years we've had a lot of turnover at the city level, so trying to get responses from attorneys can be difficult when we are in the middle of the current situations. I am working as diligently as I can to answer all of your questions.
But if people cannot clarify this, it's not an open meeting. That's my opinion.
Well, Commissioner, we provide the open meeting training laws for a reason. You know, I don't make up these laws. You don't have to like the laws. This is what we have to operate under. We're doing the best to answer your questions so that we do not violate open meeting laws.
Let's meet with the attorney and get it clarified.
Yes, sir.
Jesus Christ.
Really, I have nothing else.
Okay. Anything else, gentlemen?
No.
Do you have anything else, Mr. Tripp?
Not on the manager's report or the operations noise report.
Okay, we're still struggling with the presentation.
Okay, so if you like, we can move on to the budget.
Yeah. That would be good.
Okay, Commissioners, as you see, here is the initial draft budget for we're proposing for next year. I'll go through each of the line items. Now, you can see that the top half of the budget right now is empty. These are all salary and personnel-related issues that the Finance Department will provide as we get further into the budget process. These are not numbers that I generate. This is all coming from Finance based upon the airport's budget. For example, we have asked for a full-time admin and finance position and a part-time operations and maintenance position. Whether both of those, one of those, or none of those are ultimately approved by council, that will determine what our ultimate salary and benefit costs will be. So I'll start working on the operational equipment and supplies and moving down from there. Let's see. Okay, and Commissioners, I hope you've had the chance to review the line items in more detail. As I go through these, are there any questions? I'll go line item by line item. So for operational equipment and supplies, you can see these are the basic air-filled supplies that we use, such as our windsock replacement light bulbs for the various airport systems, weed spray chemicals, crack seal materials, and the like. Is there anything I can provide additional information on?
Okay, I'm good. Gentlemen?
Okay. The airport fuel expense, right now we're purchasing the aviation fuel that we sell at the retail pump. Right now we only have Avgas 100 low lead. We do not currently sell jet fuel. So we do have jet fuel in there in case we ever add it. But right now this is simply just an estimate for what we're going to purchase fuel. And of course this is subject to change as the market conditions change throughout the fiscal year. If the prices drop, we can buy more fuel at a cheaper price. And of course if the price of oil goes up, you know, we may have to adjust our fuel sales budget as we go. Just general office supplies for the airport. Vehicle maintenance and repairs. This year we have acquired a new Ford F-150 vehicle. We've also acquired surplus vehicles from the city, a 2008 Chevy Tahoe, and a 2008 Polaris Razor from the fire department to help do operations and maintenance inspections. So we are budgeting some money for potential maintenance and repairs to those units, and also looking at some potentially a second LED light bar for one of the vehicles should the, one of the existing ones fail.
All right.
Okay. Moving on to equipment, maintenance, and repair. There we go. If you want us to stop, gentlemen, actually our presenter for the plane pass system is now online. So I would recommend we table the budget discussion and move back into the land fees discussion. Okay. What we got?
I agree. Thank you.
And then she's presenting.
I think she's going to ask if she's going to do it via voice or. Let's see.
Miss Helena,
can you hear you, Helena?
Can you unmute yourself?
God bless technology. Let's see here.
Yeah. Miss Helena, can you unmute yourself? Hello? Miss Helena, can you hear us?
Yeah, it's not us.
Can you try talking again one more time?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Perfect. I'm so glad that we've streamlined all the technical issues.
Recording in progress.
So thank you, Jeff. Thank you so much for inviting me to present. We're excited about the potential partnership with both Cottonwood as well as several other airports out in Arizona that are looking to help mitigate, more effectively manage the training traffic that they're receiving, the inundation that we're receiving from training traffic, as well as find new ways of creating revenue for the airport. Working with a couple of airports out there in Arizona, we just onboarded with our first client the beginning of February to capture the overflow from the Super Bowl. So Bullhead International, IFP, James Scheller is our first Arizona client out there, but we have many more. Vector is headquartered in Virginia, but we're throughout the nation. We have several airports in California that we work with and partner with, as well as most of Utah, which is where I'm based and from, and we are seeing a lot of traction on the East Coast, in particular Florida. Why I wanted to mention Florida is that there's, like Arizona, there has not been a landing fee across the state for the majority of Florida general aviation airports, and they are experiencing similar difficulties that I hear from many of the airport managers that I speak to in Arizona, is that they're being inundated with flight training to the point where it's becoming a safety hazard. I spoke to a airport manager in Florida who said, I don't want to put a fee in, but I do not have a choice because literally it is becoming a safety risk and hazard, and I'm worried about operators being killed as a result of just having such a full pattern. And so landing fees are one way that has enabled airport managers. It's a step that they can take to help more effectively manage their airport traffic. We work cohesively with your airport staff to to ensure that we're staying within FAA guidelines for fairness and equitability, making sure that we're not discriminating against any particular operators. But so that's kind of a little bit of a history about our relationship with the airport managers out here that we're speaking to. I presented to Casa Grande just a few weeks back, working with Glendale, as well as Phoenix, Sky Harbor, Deer Valley, and Goodyear. So we're hoping to expand our partnership, help other airport managers that like Cottonwood who are experiencing the same problem, to help more effectively manage their traffic and bring more revenue to your airport. So I'm going to go ahead and share the screen. Before I begin, was there any particular questions that any members had in regards to Vector and the service that we're providing? Okay, perfect. So I'm going to go ahead. I will share. Oh, it looks like I have another participant needs to stop sharing their screen before I can share mine. So I think if you could stop sharing the host. Okay, perfect. Thank you. All right. Are you all able to see that screen okay? Perfect. So we are Vector Airport Systems, and we are talking about our specific plane pass solution. This is our automated billing and collections software and revenue management solution that we provide to airports across the country. A brief history about us and why we were created. So with airports that are typically charging landing fees, we saw historically those airports have a landing fee collection process where either the airport itself or the FBO is collecting on behalf of the airport. And we saw really the breaks in the chain in this system, in the fact that there was no process that was enabled to capture all of your operations, and that there was no streamlined system in place for effectively collecting that revenue. Typically, when an airport has an FBO or they're collecting on their behalf, it's only when staff is present. So automatically, you could be missing up on as much as 20 to 30% on operations. And you're having to pull staff away from other duties and responsibilities at the airport to go out, collect the invoices, collect the bills, and also actively be persistent in collecting those late payments if you're unable to reach operators effectively. So those were the issues and the challenges that we saw many airports facing. And a lot of airports just didn't have time, or they didn't have staff that they could devote to collecting these landing fees, and so had not historically put landing fees in place. With Vector's streamlined solution, we provide not only the automatic capture of 100% of your operations, but a streamlined process that doesn't add any extra time, effort, or cost upon your staff through our comprehensive service that we provide. Last year alone, we collected over $40 million in aircraft landing fees. We have a collection success rate of 99.6%, and the reason why we've been able to maintain such a high collection success rate is the fact that we have such a skilled team that is preemptive and proactive in collecting those outdue landing fees. Also, it's due to our proprietary database, and I'll dive into that in a second. We have over 60,000 aircraft operator paying relationships that work with us. So this database that we have developed has been through the meticulous and time-consuming process of partnering with each individual airport. We've created that proprietary database of our specific owner operator information. We're able to see behind the LLCs. We'll be able to see behind the business licenses and know the correct addresses to send those invoices to. And that's really the secret sauce to Vector and the reason why we are able to maintain such a high collection success rate. We're now in over 70 plus airports nationwide and on track to onboard with around 30 this year alone. So we're growing rapidly. But why? Why are we growing rapidly? And why are airports seeing such a tremendous benefit to partnering with Vector? Well, when we partner with airports that have a current fee in place, we typically see an increase anywhere from 10 to 20%. I will tell you, those numbers are more towards 15 to 20 and sometimes even 30% increases when an existing fee is in place. This is because we are capturing 100% of your operations, relying on multiple data sources. So Vertower is one of our partners, data providers that we partner with. But we also confirm and verify Vertower's operations data with multiple other data sources that we work with to ensure that 100% of those operations are captured. That, coupled with our 99.6 collection success rate, has enabled us to give the airport an additional increase in revenue, even when they have had an existing landing fee in place, over that traditional process. For operators, we have made it easy and efficient to pay because we know the easier it is to pay, the more likely operators are going to pay. We do this through our one monthly payment that through our plane pass portal that all aircraft operators receive. This relieves all operation and collections burdens from airport staff, so you're not going to have to take staff members away from other tasks and responsibilities. We provide all of the invoicing, payment processing, and collection reports on your behalf. We do this with complete transparency in providing you insight through our portal to the airport that provides you a comprehensive view of all operations, all billing activity, and all active collections that we have received on behalf of the airport. We do this all with no upfront cost or implementation charge to the airport. So we're actually a revenue share model. How we make money is we take a percentage not of the collections billed, but of those received. So it incentivizes a Vector to collect absolutely all of those invoices that we've sent out on your behalf and also keeps us accountable in maintaining that high collection success rate. These are a few of the airports that we work with and some of the testimonials that they have shared with us as a result of onboarding with Vector. Vector, especially with smaller general aviation airports, I have seen tremendous benefit because we have such an optimized solution, because we're not adding extra time or burden upon your staff and enabling the airport to generate additional revenue without changing any of your current processes. So again, some highlights and why airports see such a tremendous benefit. Our solution doesn't require any manual inputs, no tracking from the airport or the FBO. It's not going to add any additional labor burden, operational burden, time, anything from your staff. It's fully automated and tracks 100% of your operations and aircraft identification 365 days a year, going 24/7. Like I said, we do partner holistically with Vertower as one of our partners, but also verify Vertower's data through a fusion of multiple sources. So surveillance, flight plan, as well as ADF speed, because we wanted to ensure completely comprehensive coverage. We consolidate all of those data streams into that proprietary database of billable operations and unique owner operators that I touched upon earlier. That's our secret sauce. That's truly why Vector has received such tremendous success. It's because we're continuously improving that proprietary database. We are adding new operators as they come into the airport, new aircraft as they're being built, and we're constantly updating all of the addresses to ensure that they are being sent effectively and correctly. when it comes to the billing. We will apply your fee rules based on your specific regulations and fee schedules. We never waive fees based on fuel sales or as favors. You're the airport. You're in charge. You set the rates. You set the fees. We just do the collections on your behalf. So, and then you don't have to deal with any angry owner operator calls. We handle all of that for you. We provide this all, again, with our U.S.-based customer service staff. So we're going to take any questions, disputes from operators. They all would be handled by our effective team. And again, we know who those operators are. We're able to maintain that high collection success rate based on that accurate owner-operator database. Currently, we have over 200,000 aircraft and over 65,000 unique aircraft owners. In addition to our collection service, as I touched upon earlier, we're going to provide you as the airport a comprehensive portal so you can see access into all activities at all times. In addition to this, we will also send you monthly exportable reports that will show you for your records. So here's a graph of how the process actually works. To give you a real visualization, it starts with that 100% of all operations captured through that fusion of multiple data sources, including our friends at FurTower. This data is then given to our analysts who apply the fee rules. They assign the correct tail numbers to correct operators and send out those invoices to all of the owner operators at the end of each month. Collections, questions, concerns are all handled by our effective team who facilitates all any disputes, any adjustments that need to be made. All payments will come to a Vector Secure escrow account where we would take our fee percentage off of the top and remit the rest of the funds to the airport. So again, you're not paying for anything. We actually pay you. In addition to that online portal, we send you monthly billing reports activity so you can actually track the changes and see how the airport is tracking over time. Any questions on this specific system at this time? I'm sorry.
We have a question of electronic data.
All right. There was a little bit of an echo. I'm going to keep going, and then we'll just take all questions at the end, it seems. So, again, this is a little bit of information about our specifically trained team. We're all in-house, and we're all U.S.-based. We are continually improving our software to make more efficient the program and service. We actually are... This is new to our software. We're going to be going live with our automated parking fee collection. So that's something that we're excited to be coming out with. And we're continually developing this software to ensure that it is the most efficient and effective solution in the market. Here's an actual screenshot of the airport portal. So this is what I wanted to show you so you can see all of the unique insights that Vector provides. So this is the airport portal. You would be able to see all activities for either a monthly, weekly, or daily view. So you can change that view in the upper left here. You would see all arrivals, all departures. You then see the breakdown of that activity with the specific date and time stamps. So you get to see the origin and destination of those aircraft, the tail number, the model type, engine type, as well as the max takeoff weight. And here you see all fee rules applied. So apologies if it's a little bit blurry. You would be able to see a comprehensive view of all fees that have been applied, assigned to each individual aircraft operator. If you do see here, you see a fee that has a strike through in it. That is an indication that that operator is either a based operator or a signatory operator, but has been exempted from fees in our system. So we would work very cohesively with you as the airport. We would work very cohesively with Jeff to ensure that all of your local tenants, all of your based operators would be exempted from fees. And you still see all of the fees applied in the system. You see the fees that they would have generated, but that strike through that indicates that that operator has been exempted. So this ensures that we are sending those fees out accurately and at invoicing effectively. Did someone have a question?
Yes. How do you collect the data?
I'm sorry?
How do you collect the data?
How do we collect the data? Again, that is through our data provider. So Vertower, as well as our other data providers that we would work with to get all of that information. Did that answer your question? I'm so sorry. I'm unable to hear you. There's a little bit of an echo.
I can't hear you.
You want to come up and speak at the podium?
With your permission.
If you're not ADSB compliant.
How do you collect the data? Do you have a little man on the roof that has a camera, or do you do it through some technical means like ADS-B transmission?
Correct, sir. So it would be through ADS-B transmission as well as flight plan. And then we work and partner with Vertower. So Vertower is your data provider there at Cottonwood. And we partner with Vertower. They send us those operational counts and daily activities. So that's how we're pulling the data and get all of that into our system.
Just a quick question at Cottonwood. What if I'm not ADS-B compliant, which I don't have to be here?
Mm-hmm. So, perfect question. So, for operators that turn off their responders, I actually have, let me bring that up. So Casa Grande also had questions regarding that specific instance, owner operators that turn off their ADS-B. Our response is that it is a violation of FAA policy. The responder transponder is required to be on both during flight and while taxiing. We do see that there are aircraft activities where we do actually see them. They intentionally turn off their responders. The aircraft, however, are still visible in the tracking system data that Vector uses. And we also utilize flight plan and available FAA radar data. So we don't rely solely upon the operations data from one system like Vertower, but we analyze actively the track points from multiple sources and then are able to bridge the gaps of that particular flight path. So we are able to see that the operator did when they turned it off, when they turned it back on, and able to connect the dots. When it comes to low passes and touch and goes, plane pass can only charge landing fees if the aircraft touches the ground. The airport unfortunately does not have control or authority to build the aircraft that do not touch the ground, even if they are making repetitive low passes. So we have a variety of settings to derive operation types based on arrival and departure pairings. And one of these is specifically for touch and goes based on the timing of arrival and departure for the same aircraft. This, in combination with other potential information to analyze the position, speed, and type of aircraft, as well as the wind speed and direction, helps determine if the aircraft could have been flying or was on the ground. So those are some of the ways that Vector works actively to capture operators who intentionally turn off their ADS-B to try and avoid landing fees or don't actually touch the runway. Does that make sense?
He said no.
I have several questions.
Oh, okay. Can you elaborate on your question a little bit? And maybe I can answer.
Vice Chair Wade, if you could turn on your mic, please.
Okay. Do you find that your system, of all the airports that you're doing this service with, how many of them are general aviation versus large aircraft, 12,500 pounds and above, which a lot of airports do regulate a landing fee for those type of aircraft, but not for small aircraft like Scottsdale, Deer Valley? They don't have landing fees. For an aircraft, a light aircraft.
Right.
Is a lot of your business for the larger aircraft?
No. Actually, we're more general aviation focused. So while we do partner with airports that have those larger traffic counts, aircraft that is 12.5 and above, that is where we really wanted to be able to maintain a speciality in being able to track and identify accurately those aircraft that is below 12.5. And speaking on behalf of, you know, a couple of Utah airports, they are around the same size as Cottonwood. In fact, I have a airport in Spanish Fork, Utah, that is looking to build down to zero, just like we are going, just like is proposed here at Cottonwood. And so that's where our specific system comes in and why we rely upon multiple data sources to be able to track all of those operations that are harder typically to track than those that are 12.5 and above that have usually filed flight plans and so forth.
Okay. What do you do with helicopters? Do you track, like, are medical helicopters coming and going? Department of Public Safety, do they have landing fees every time?
Great question. So it depends on the airport if they want to charge helicopters. Some airports do. They have a specific helicopter landing fee charge. We're able to apply the exact same system and tracking the information for helicopters, just as we do for other aircraft types. When it comes to medical flights or angel flights, those are typically exempted across airports. I see that most state government, federal government, forest fire, medevac, angel flights, and are typically exempted from landing fees. Okay. But we do see all of those operations, and we exempt them.
Okay. I have several questions. I hope you'll bear with me.
Of course.
What about in Prescott, for example, an airport close to us, that aircraft do a low flyby?
Mm-hmm.
Is that considered a landing? And how would you know it's not a
great landing? Great question. It depends on, you know, how close they are to the ground. So here, if you can see my screen, they say that if the aircraft doesn't actually touch the ground, if they just continue to make repetitive low passes, the airspace above the ground is the domain of the FAA. So we at Vector can only charge landing fees if the aircraft actually touches the ground. And since altimeters in most aircraft are based on pressure, their resolution is limited to 25-foot increments, so making it difficult to determine if an aircraft has touched based solely upon that data. What we do is we have a variety of settings in our system to derive operation types based on arrivals or departure pairings. And one of these is specifically for those low landings, those touch and goes. This is based on the timing of arrival and departure for the same aircraft. So we also analyze this information, the position, the speed, the type of aircraft, as well as the wind and speed to determine if the aircraft could, an aircraft could have been flying or if it was on the ground. It's like below stall speed for the current conditions. So that's one way we overcome that.
Okay. What is your highest fee, landing fee, for light aircraft that you charge, or that,
great.
And what is the lowest fee?
Great question. So let me dive back into this presentation really quick. I'm going to skip a couple of slides. This is a couple of different landing fee structures, and these are specific general aviation airports. So you can see the different rate types. And in my experience with airports is that no airport is the same in charging landing fees. Every airport is different. Every airport has a uniqueness factor. And with Santa Monica, for instance, they bill all the way down to zero. So they bill everyone. It's a per 1,000 pounds. It's a $5.48 fee. Our highest, one of our highest general aviation airports is actually Aspen. They also bill down to zero, and their rate is $8.33 per 1,000 pounds. They actually are going to raise this to $9. So that is pretty high for, that's about probably the highest rate in the country is Aspen's.
Okay.
Others, you can go ahead.
Of that fee charged, what is your administrative fee of that amount? What percent?
Great question. So let me go ahead and present these specific figures. And let me know if you have difficulty seeing this. An average fee that we see across the country and what I have proposed here is a $2 per 1,000 pounds. That is very generally accepted. That's a good average fee across the country. So that's why we have modeled these projections based on a $2 per 1,000 pounds. We have included a minimum landing fee of $10 to give you an idea of what differences that you can, you know, the difference that you would see in revenue should you decide to put a minimum landing fee in place. And then also an escalated fee. So there's an escalated fee of, you can see it's broken down by weights, and that gives you, gives you a couple of different fee structures. So the landing fee itself, the $2 per 1,000 pounds, and this is taking your unique airport's operations from Vertower, we see that you can gain just a little bit, almost $54,000 annually. If you did a landing fee with that $10 minimum, it would be $87,000. The landing fee that is escalated would jump to $92,000, so almost $93,000 annually. How our rate structure is applied is actually as your annual operations increase, our fee percentage decreases. But given these numbers and figures, I would say you're in the 25%. So Vector would take 25%, and that's off of all operations that we have effectively built. So to calculate accordingly, you know, what rate structure Cottonwood would want to take, it would be 25% of those gross numbers.
Okay. I just have a couple more for you.
Of course.
I'm having a difficult time grasping why Cottonwood, Arizona would be interested in charging people to come here to a very large extent. What impact is this going to have on our fuel sale? We have self-serve fuel. The city makes money off of selling fuel, and we have a lot of pilots that fly in to purchase fuel, which they may not fly in to do that if there's a landing fee. You see the downside of that?
Yes, and that is a common question that I get asked. The reason why that we see airports are interested in putting a landing fee in place is, number one, and what I see in Florida, is that they are being inundated by traffic that doesn't necessarily pay for fuel at their airport. They have a lot of training traffic and training flights that are taking up the pattern. They're filling up that pattern and making it more difficult for business jets, charter jets, that bigger traffic that typically does purchase fuel to actually land at the airport. So even though it seems kind of paradoxical in nature, by implementing a landing fee, it helps to more effectively manage the traffic. And I will tell you that many of the business jets and charter jets that are, you know, flying in and out of airports across the nation, they are paying landing fees at other airports. It's a common fee. It's something that's widely accepted across the nation. And so we do not see a huge pushback when we implement a landing fee with a new airport. It's something that is very widely accepted across the country. And those business jets, they just pass those extra fees along to their clients. Same with the flight schools. So the flight schools that do training, there's several airports that charge training traffic out in California that we work with. What we see is that they actually just pass on those landing fee bills. They just hike up the students' rates and are able to account for that expense in that regard. So when we implement with a new fee, even though there is some initial pushback, it's mostly from the actual local operators. And what we do is we assure the local operators that they're not going to be charged. They're based there, and they're paying their dues to the airport. And so they're not going to be charged a landing fee. And we're working effectively in our system to make sure that those base lists are kept up to date, and the operators are all exempted out of our system. But that's really the only pushback that we see. Generally, the business jets, the charter jets, they're paying landing fees at other airports, and it's something that they're expecting. They know that more and more airports are having to keep up with the cost of inflation. So, and it's just a fact of life. You drive on a toll road, you pay the toll. And it's the exact same thing in aviation.
Do you have airports that are really close to each other and there's a transition of traffic because of that? For example,
yes.
Cottonwood, we have a Sedona airport that's about just a few miles away via Exeter. I would suspect people would just as soon land in Sedona than in Cottonwood if you had to pay a $15, $16 landing fee. Do you find that a problem in any airports that you have close together? Is that a difficulty?
There is a correlation between the traffic. And so what we do see is that a lot of airports proactively will work together to implement at the same time. However, there are some airports that they just have a problem. Like it's a specific airport in Florida where he says, I literally cannot it's going to become a safety hazard. It already is a safety hazard, and I have to do this regardless of what my other effect it has on my neighbors. And so what we tend to see is that when one airport puts a fee in, the others are actually quick to follow if they don't onboard initially with that airport at the same time. And more and more airports are turning to this as a solution for finding additional revenue to help contribute to the care and maintenance of the airport, also to have greater insight into their operations, and then to help more effectively manage the traffic.
Okay, my last question is, we in Cottonwood, we do not have a fixed base operator. And I think that a lot of the pilots and visitors would like to have a fixed base operator here. It would seem to me that this activity would be very detrimental to an FBO that wanted to come to Cottonwood and maybe sell fuel. Mm-hmm. Or have students. It seems like to me this would be a roadblock for somebody wanting to come to Cottonwood.
So yes, there is, and this is excellent questions. It depends on the FBO. There are some airports where the FBO has been collecting the landing fees, and they were just happy to give over the collections process to Vector as they are busy selling fuel and providing other services. We work holistically with the FBOs. We're not the FBO's enemy. What we tend to see is that the FBO, they charge for fuel. They also can charge for ramp fees. And we at Vector just charge the landing fees. So it's a cohesive relationship. We can work harmoniously together, and we absolutely do at many airports. So there's also an airport out here in Utah that we just onboarded with. It's actually Bountiful. The airport itself is the FBO, and they continue to charge and take care of all of their fuel sales. They take care of all of their ramps, fees, and so forth, but they rely upon Vector system to capture all of those landing fees, because you have, again, operations that occur at night when staff isn't present, and so having an automated solution is the answer.
Thank you. I have one more question. It probably should have been my first question. Why do we want to do this? I mean, why? What is this in Cottonwood's interest?
Excuse me, Commissioner, with all due respect, that's really not a question for her. That's a question for me. I was directed to pursue this, to ask questions. It's not a guarantee we'll put it into place, but this is a process to look at the pros and the cons for the potential adoption. This will ultimately be taken to council for them to make a final decision whether they want the city to adopt this or not.
I understand that, but this is our first opportunity to look at this information and to ask questions, and I think that's a pretty basic one, is that my inclination is this would hurt the economy more than help it. And that's all the questions I have. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. I appreciate your questions. To add to that, I can't speak for the airport. I can't speak for Cottonwood specifically. Jeff would have further insights into that. The reason why a lot of smaller general aviation airports like Cottonwood that have a similar situation is that they have neighborhoods, they have extensive noise complaints, and they're wanting to help reduce the noise, they're wanting to reduce the traffic at that specific airport, so it helps benefit the community. It also benefits the airport and the community to know that this is now an airport that is generating its own revenue. So as I understand it, airports are supposed to be self-sufficient and sustaining and not just reliant solely upon the grant funding that they receive. And so to have a means of revenue that enables you to scale and will grow with you as your operations grow, and I understand from Cottonwood that the traffic is just going to grow over time. To have a system in place that would be able to bring in additional funds so that you can hire more staff members, you can contribute to the care and maintenance of the airport. This is revenue that the airport itself is generating. It has been tremendous benefit to other airports similar to Cottonwood that I have worked with and presented to. And so those were the benefits to the city that many of the airports I work with have found. It is a controversial decision. I absolutely am aware of that. And it's something that must be taken with careful thought and consideration. And I know that there are specific, conditions at Cottonwood. This is one system and solution that we have found to be very tremendous benefit, especially to airports that are similar in operations and situation as Cottonwood. But again, it's up to you and what's best for your city and your airport.
Ready. Why don't we do a couple more questions? Is this for this lady? Okay, and then you.
Thank you for your presentation. I just had a question clarification regarding your opening remarks, and then you returned to them just before. And with regard to the landing fees as an effective traffic mitigation strategy. So in your opening remarks and then just now, you said that for communities that are impacted by excessive flight training and the noise associated with that, that this can be a desirable strategy. And, of course, an effective strategy for those communities is fees as a deterrent that will ultimately reduce flights.
Correct.
You made a prior point, however, that suggested that the costs of these fees were simply passed on to students, which suggests to me a net zero kind of scenario in which deterrence is maybe not as effective as it might be. So I'm just interested in whether or not you have any empirical support for the idea that landing fees with your system are a deterrent and effective in reducing the absolute number of repetitive flight training?
Excellent question, and I thank you for bringing that up. So, again, it's dependent upon the fee and the fee structure. I'm sorry, that's going blank. Let me try and pull this slide back up. Oh, here we go. So if you see Santa Monica Airport, so this airport, when we partnered with them, the community actually wanted to shut down the airport. And so that's why they charged such a high fee. They charged all the way down to zero, and they charged a rate of $5.48, which was very high compared to the other landing fees of neighboring airports. This drove the traffic away. So to answer your question, yes. The extra fees are applied to the flight students, but depending on the fee and how high you put it, where you decide to, price your fee rate, dependent upon your specific airport and the other surrounding airports, that is how it helps mitigate the traffic. If you were to put an astronomical fee in, you're going to reduce most of the traffic because they will go to other airports, even though the fee is being passed on to the students. If you do a fee that is acceptable, that is widely established, then we see that the you may see a change in operations. You may see a decrease in the flight training, just even though those same excessive expenses are being passed along to the students. There may be, and we do see that happen. But it depends upon how it's actually structured. And we've worked with airports long enough. We've seen how to recommend fees in a way that deters the traffic that you want to deter and encourages the larger traffic, the business jets, the corporate jets that buy fuel and encourage those traffic numbers.
But you haven't haven't worked any of that into your current proposal for the city of Cottonwood.
Not at this current proposal. So at this structure, what we've done is, so that's the landing fee with the minimum of $2. I wanted to suggest a very widely accepted fee. There is another fee structure we could propose with another airport, is that actually having a higher fee for lighter aircraft and actually having a de-escalating rate structure. So it encourages larger aircraft, like those business jets. They're actually receiving a lower fee. And that's something that we can work with as well.
Hi, thank you to Bill for your questions and the last speaker and the one prior. So looking at this, not as a pilot, as a community member, are we going to just keep ratcheting up the fees to make the people happy? That is a really question you have to think in your head. The people knew there were airports when they moved here. I live under the flight path. They're always over my community. And we just deal with it. But when does the rights of pilots, and I'm speaking of the ones at Embry-Riddle, because that's one of the big flight schools for airline pilots, when does the right of them having to learn to fly and to be able to go to different airports become less than the people complaining in the community, when there really is a small amount of noise? But during the summer, you have your windows closed, your air conditioner is on, you don't hear it. During the winter, you have your windows closed, your heater on, you really don't hear it. And then also the first question, one of the first question for you I had was, one of the statements you made is there's zero options to like waive the fees. So if we did have a private pilot land at the airport, as we did many years ago, and we fill up with gas, would that mean our landing fee would be waived? According to what you said, maybe I took it wrong, that is not an option. I think that should definitely be an option. Also, when you said before, hang on. I'm sorry, I lost the last question. But you're just good. Really think about it and put your thoughts in it. And I know the city council is going to get input. But do we want to push pilots away from flying in to see our city and not allow them to come so that we send them to somewhere else? So our community, our revenue in the city gets $0. But other cities get a lot of money. That's realistic. Also, that's the other one, was the control tower. I think it would be feasible to look at putting a control tower there if people are concerned about safety, and that's the concern I'm hearing. Actually, I'm hearing noise. But safety, put a control tower in. I know that costs money, but that's another option. Thank you.
Just wanted to get a clarification on something.
This kind of goes with the fees. Now, the Cessna 172, bare naked, is what, 1,600 pounds? So with fuel, it's just over 2,000 pounds.
Closer to 2,500.
2,500, okay. So those flights that we're seeing repetitively every day, they'd be charged approximately $4 for each maneuver that goes over. If we had indoctrinated this, put this into life, and gave the fees at $2. That's pretty much what we'd be looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just wanted to get the clarification.
Just talking purposes again, this is the fee discussion will be...
Yes, yes.
Discussion. This is just for additional talking purposes. It's not saying this is an absolute...
I'm just trying to get the idea of the airplanes that we're looking at right now. We know how much they weigh. That's what I wanted to clarify, because then we can kind of calculate this and see how it moves forward. Okay? All right. Thank you.
Any other questions for me?
Commissioner, I will say
at the end of the meeting, I will post the next steps for the process, along with my recommendation for the commissioners and members of the public, if they have specific questions, to send them to the airport.noise email so I can start correlating those as we get ready for future meetings with both the commission and the airport noise working group, any other public meetings that we want to have, because again, this is not a one meeting and we're done. This is going to be a multi-step process to make sure all the questions are asked and answered, putting together the SWOT analysis, because there are a number of things where I know some people want this fee to be a panacea to chase all the planes away, but you also have to consider if every other airport does the exact same thing and the costs are the same, it's not going to magically say nobody's going to fly at Cottonwood potentially and they're going to go somewhere else when the other airports say, well, shoot, we'll do the exact same thing. So
exactly.
I just want to caution people that, you know, there are a lot of questions that we have to take a look at. This is one more step in the overall noise program. But I know somebody has said, well, we should do $100. Any of the rates and fees do have to be based in reality, based upon our airport operating costs, be consistent with what the FAA allows us to do. So when somebody said we can make $250,000 a month by charging $100, you know, that's not going to happen. A more realistic fee in the $5 to $10 range is something we'll take a look at. And again, this will be, you know, presented at multiple meetings. Then ultimately, when we are ready, we will take this to council to discuss the pros and cons, and it'll be finally a council decision of whether they want to go forward with this.
Exactly. And thank you, Jeff, for highlighting that. This is something I know the lady mentioned that, yes, it would be, the community might be impacted with operators flying away to other airports. There is tremendous interest in multiple airports in Arizona in implementing landing fees and helping to solve the similar problems that Cottonwood is experiencing. And so that is something that we're actively working with to have kind of a cohesive solution to present to, you know, each individual airport, but also have a fee structure that is fair and equitable. And again, we're going to work with you and help be educators in this process. We want to be of benefit to your airport and not a deficit. So if I can be of any other assistance, I would be more than willing to present again, provide any other additional materials, education, please feel free to reach out. And I appreciate the invitation to this meeting. I appreciated your questions, and thank you so much for letting me present to you today.
Thank you.
All right, I am going to quit sharing.
Do you have, did you finish your segment, Jeff?
Let's see here. For the plane pass, one thing I do want to pull up is just the reminder for the next steps. That we will be conducting further meetings to discuss and solicit input from both the commission and members of the public. I do request anybody that wants to send in written questions or comments to submit them to the airport. And I'll pull up the noise, I'll pull up the proper email at the end. Now, we do want to discuss the landing rate fee methodology to say what do we want to base it on, and ultimately it does have to be a fair and equitable rate. We can't just throw an arbitrary number out. You know, let's use the example of $100 per landing fee. Okay, that will far outpace what the airport's operating costs are. So part of this does tie back into our airport operating budget. So it does have to be, you know, say a place like Aspen, which is pretty much, you know, a corporate jet place, you're going to see higher fees because those are larger operators. They're not doing flight training at an airport like that. So we have to, you know, be consistent with what type of traffic we have. But again, the more questions we can get from everybody, we can put those all together. We will post these questions to the airport webpage. I do have a number of questions. Some were already addressed tonight in the presentation that I had asked of Vector in the past, and some of my other airport peers have asked a similar question. So again, we want to do this in an open, transparent manner, so all the questions are asked and answered. All the information will be publicly available, and it's my intent when we get at the end of this to put together a SWOT analysis so we can show all the pros and cons of the potential system, to take it to council so that we have all the questions asked and answered. And then again.
And Jeff, I will resend all of those answers to those questions that you had asked so that you have those. And then I will also send this document back to you on specifically the touch and goes, the ADS-B transponders. I'll send that in a follow-up to you later tonight.
Okay, thank you very much. And I will post that to the webpage by Friday. So again, if anybody has any comments, questions, or concerns, please send any emails to airport.noise@cottonwoodaz.gov, and then we will continue moving forward in this process.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Tripp. Yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, ladies. Appreciate your time, and thank you. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. You too. Enjoy Utah.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's see here. All right. Okay, Commissioner, do you want to jump back into the budget?
Yes, please. Okay. Is there anybody else have a short question?
Are you going to have a discussion on this subject?
Sir?
Are you going to have further discussion here amongst us on this subject tonight?
Yep. Yes, sir.
Tonight?
That's what I've been saying. We're going to do multiple meetings.
I think we're probably not going to have an in-depth discussion tonight. A lot more. This will happen next week, next month, rather. I think we're about wrapped up on questions with this right now. We need to digest it.
I would suggest that we have a working session where we can bring pilots in, business people, and talk about this in depth as far as pros and cons. Mm-hmm. And maybe make it a special meeting just for that mm-hmm. you know, and invite the right people to come in that can give a lot of input.
I think that's a great idea. Let's go ahead and set something up.
Yep, I'll be happy to let you set that up, Commissioner. If you want to set up the pilot meeting, just tell me when, and I'll get the notices out. But I'll let you run that meeting.
So we will be having a separate meeting. Mm-hmm. Alrighty, looks like we're about done with this subject tonight. I don't see any hands going up. Why don't we move along, finish up the budget, and the hour's starting to get late.
Oh, we're just getting started, Commissioner. We're going to go till midnight.
You can go to midnight.
Okay, Commissioner, now going back to the airport equipment and maintenance and repair, I can see we're talking about things such as the annual fuel tank inspections for the aviation fuel system, our weather service annual maintenance. We do have our spring contract coming up, vehicle gate maintenance and repair, potential repairs to the airfield lighting and signage systems. Now, of course, we are going to be replacing that system later this year, so again, that should hopefully keep the cost down to a minimum. Routine preventative maintenance repairs to the airfield. We have our annual fire alarm and fire extinguisher inspections we need to do, and then I'm still looking to try to replace the current fuel metering system in the avgas tank that was the original 1998. I just simply have another time to get to that. So if I don't get to it in this fiscal year, since we're quickly coming to the end, I'll be budgeting to carry that over into the next year. We did just get, today, we got City of Alcon Services on board, the Phillips 66 brand, so we'll be working with them to do some additional repairs and upgrades to the fuel system.
Okay.
Moving on to building maintenance repairs. We have in our terminal building, we have the heating and air conditioning systems. We just replaced the heating and air conditioning systems last month, so now it should just be routine inspection and repair. I am still looking to see if we can do a remodel to the bathrooms. We have just some miscellaneous general repairs that may pop up in the terminal. For the end hangar, the city-operated hangar, looking at door maintenance and other exterior repairs. One of the big items we're working on right now is the fire suppression system, which has been an ongoing problem. So we are working with various city departments and the fire marshal to get the, I think we have a meeting next week with our fire company to try to take a look and see what we need to do to upgrade that system. We've been doing the same repairs to the system. So we'll be getting into more depth details to make sure that system is functioning properly. Going on to our contractual services, we have things such as our annual cost for the Vertower system, our weather observation system, the contract we have to have to get the data into the National Airspace System, our stormwater permits program that we're required to have, our fuel service operations, things such as the annual support for our QT pod credit card system that operates the system, a lot of different miscellaneous services. I am looking at seeing about trying to get some better airport operations and management software to help get away from a lot of the Excel spreadsheets, to do things more computerized, to let the technology do more of the work than me having to do everything manually. Other small things, the tracking system for the airport courtesy car, and then the portalette that we have out at the self-service, you know, that annual contract. Some capital projects. We do have money budgeted for our on-call planning consulting services with Kimley Horn as they finish up their contract in December. So anything that pops up that has been unanticipated, we can then cover with their cost. And then we have an FAA-mandated Title VI program, which we have to develop. Trying to use the bill grants that we have, but if we do not have enough money in the bill grants to do that, then I'm putting money aside to cover that mandated cost for the FAA. Any questions on contractual services?
I have a question on the budget itself. Do you, is Mr. Rodriguez back there, do you have to fight for this budget? I mean, does somebody at the city try to take you apart on some of these items? Or do you just, you know, is there a pretty tough process to go through with this? Because I can't comment on that. But it seems like to me people at the city, maybe some kind of a group of three or four people may challenge you. Do they challenge you?
Yes. I mean, Commissioner, we go through the standard city budget process, so it's not me just asking and the council says yes or no. So it does go through multiple reviews. For example, I report to the Public Works and Transportation Director, so he's reviewing my budget. Then it goes to the city manager, the finance department, so it's looked at multiple levels, and then ultimately goes to council. And then council can still modify or pull things from the budget as they see fit. So again,
has it been modified since that process?
Well, this is draft only, Commissioner. This is as we're now in the process of the current fiscal year budget preparing these. I'm asking for your input and consent as I move forward. The budget starts July 1, so we are in the process of putting the operating and the capital budgets into the city budget system for review, and this is over the next several months. This will be reviewed by the various city departments, and then the further changes will be made as necessary, and then ultimately it goes to council. And then council has final say on what they want. So if a council member wants to pull something, they have that ability to, or they could fund it as due. Now, I try to put a realistic budget. One of the reasons I go through this effort with this amount of detail is to show that what are our true costs. So it's not just, let's put $20,000 into a slush fund that we might use. It's more, these are our actual costs that I'm seeing over the last couple of years in trying to identify actual cost. In other words, there's always going to be things that will pop up that are unanticipated, but I try to get as true a realistic budget as possible. But again, if the city, and I've done this at other cities where they may say you need to cut X amount of dollars off the budget, then we'll go back in and take a look at our numbers and get down to the number that the city tells us we need to get to.
Okay. Any other comments, gentlemen?
Yep. Okay, moving on to the bank charges. These are all the credit card fees. I'm waiting to get that information from the finance department. This is simply the processing fees. Computer support for the various things like the RIT support and some of the other costs that we have. One of the big items right now is the Starlink account that I had to pay for. So we have somewhat reliable internet at the terminal. Once Sparklight finally completes their running the cable to the terminal, we can get rid of that cost. So I'm hoping that that will drop off by the start of the fiscal year, and that money can be spent somewhere else. General outside legal counsel, of course, you know, as I look at things such as the air park leases or other things that require outside counsel, we do budget money for that. A little bit of money for advertising, our standard utilities costs for our water, wastewater, gas, electric, and the like. Our telephone costs. I know there has been some questions. I know Commissioner Sutton asked if we can do an airport event. This has been a carryover. So I know if the commissioners want to take the lead to do some kind of, to organize some kind of airport event this summer or fall, Yeah, we are budgeting some money for that. Training and travel, this is so myself and our operations and maintenance employee can, you know, I go to a number of conferences. We also do have a number of our training courses that we need to go to for operations, maintenance, fuel service, and the like. We also try to do as much online training as possible through available opportunities. And then subscriptions and memberships, a number of things my professional association dues for some of the airport associations at the state, region, and national levels. We have our online training through the American Association of Airport Executives, our basic airnav.com listing for the FBO, legislative day to state capital sponsorships when we go down in January to meet with the legislators to try to help protect the state aviation fund from sweeps, which is always a concern. Then some other things are National Air Transportation Association annual membership and our professional line service training programs for both Bruce and myself to do our quality control and all the other fuel-related training and certifications we need to keep to operate the fuel. And then some other things, Bluebeam software, that's just, that is for CAD for me to review all the plans and specs. That's what the engineers use so I can then make my comments on those rather than doing things by hand. And then our annual herbicide training we have to do to let our operations and maintenance employee go through the state mandated herbicide and pesticide training so he can apply the herbicides and pesticides. And then we get down to things like postage and freight, our airport liability insurance. That number, again, just comes right from risk management. The indirect cost to the general fund, again, that is provided by the finance department as we get towards the end of the budget preparation. And then I'm looking at some requests for some furnishings and equipment. One thing we're asking for is a large enclosed cab mower with a larger mower deck to handle the airfield mowing duties. Right now, I think Public Works has two mowers that are getting very long in the tooth, and utilities, we're borrowing their mower. So we're hoping to see between our maybe the airport and the Public Works going in to get a larger mower that can be used citywide, but that will allow us to do not only the airfield proper, but the two runway protection zones that we don't get to right now just because of the lack of equipment. The runway blast pad seal coat and remark, while ADOT is providing the 1-inch overlay for the runway itself, blast pads are not included in that project, so I'm budgeting to do the seal coat and restriping. We've already crack sealed the blast pads, and we'll do any touch-ups as needed. And then we're looking at some things such as office furniture to upgrade in the terminal. Let's see, actually I need to take out the hangar and fire suppression because I have to find out what we want to have there. I had it someplace else up in the equipment. And then we're also doing some additional security camera improvements. IT has done some recent improvements to give us higher quality cameras. We'll be doing an additional group of cameras to try to get better coverage on, say, the south side of the airport that we don't currently have. And that is, right now we're looking at about just under $1.3 million when you include the operating, but it also includes the capital. And the fuel, when you start taking out the grant matches, that's about $569,000 potential grant matches. Our estimated fuel expense of about $250,000, so you really start to drop down our operating expenses. This is, again, about $475,000 before we add in all of the personnel costs. So we're still, you know, under $500,000 for the general operation of this airport on a 365-day year process. And then once we get the further in the budget, again, if we get an additional position, that will change our personnel costs. Otherwise, we'll still remain with the two full-time employees we have currently. And I'll bring this back to the commission next month and the month after as we get further into this budget process. That's it for the operating budget. Can I answer any questions on them that maybe not been asked yet?
Gentlemen.
Okay. Okay, just going down to the tentative capital budget for next year. I will present the five-year airport capital improvement program update at next month's meeting as we're still working on that. But we're looking at right now the first, I think, five projects listed in yellow are current fiscal year projects that we will be carrying over a certain amount of money because we will not complete all these projects in this fiscal year. The windsock and segmented circle design is in progress, as is the disadvantaged business enterprise program for fiscal years 22, 23, and 24. We're hoping to get that finished before this year, but we are going to budget some money in case we have to carry over into next year. The precision approach path indicators and the runway end identifier light upgrades, the design is currently underway. along concurrently with the guidance sign for the runway project. So that is progressing nicely. We're coming closer towards the 30% plans. Again, it's our goal to get the design phase done this year, but this money also will be funding the construction phase, so we'll be rolling this money over into next year. And we already have the two grants in hand from the state in the amount of $600,000 to fund those projects. We're looking at the airport pavement management system, the runway overlay. That's the one-inch overlay that we've already, council's already approved and we budgeted for. As I mentioned, the state is going to do the pre-bid meeting on March 29th. So sometime later this spring or into the summer, whenever they get their bids and their schedules done, we will do that project. So again, we'll roll those dollars over for next year. And then finally, as we're finishing up the taxiway A design phase, we have the 90% plans are currently into the city for review. So we're trying to get that all buttoned up this year. And then the FAA has told us we'll probably get the design phase in fiscal year 26. So at least we'll have the plans in hand. So if for some reason, next fiscal year, the FAA comes back and says there's actually money available for the taxiway, we would then have to go back to the city to see if the city wanted to provide the matching funds for that product at this time. That would be, of course, outside our normal budget, but that is something we could do. But again, once the plans are there and on the shelf, we're at least in a position to compete for additional discretionary grant funding should it become available throughout the fiscal year. Okay, so those would be the carryovers. Now, for next year, we're looking at some things that we're asking for. The environmental assessment, which is the first step to the future runway extension of about 500 feet per the master plan. The EA could take 1 to 2 years. We have to get that done before we can then go into the design phase. We have requested a Part 150 noise compatibility study as, again, part of our overall noise abatement program. What that requires is us to go through this program. It's usually about a two-year process to then start looking at if we want to do potential mandatory FAA-approved noise abatement policies and procedures. Right now, everything we do is, you know, is voluntary per FAA. The Part 150 process is the first step to identify and potentially get FAA approval for a number of items. So we're asking for that funding in this next fiscal year. The construction phase for the windsock and the segmented circle relocation to move from the west side of the airport over to the east side in preparation to take that hill down for future hangar development. We have asked for grant money from the state to upgrade and replace the existing runway light system. We know that it's old, it's direct burial cables, and it's, you know, it could fail at any time now. So we do want to upgrade that system as soon as funding is available. The obstruction mitigation, as I mentioned, the state notified us that we are in line to get the $500,000 in next year's budget, subject to council approval. Then we're putting in the two items we discussed in the operating budget, the airport mower, and then the blast pad project. That's what we're looking at for next year. And then at the April meeting, I'll then talk about the five-year capital program where we can talk about the runway, the taxiway, the potential for more obstruction plans, and then Councilman Wade's, the Commissioner Wade's request to talk, see about potentially purchasing additional land.
Ready.
If there's any other questions I can answer about the capital program at this point.
Looks like we're good.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr.
And Commissioner, if you're good with that, I don't know if you want to do a motion to accept as, you know, the tentative budget subject to future updates, or again, that would be help as I go forward towards council. Of course, I'll present this to you as we move further.
I'll make such a motion.
I'll second.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Mm-hmm. Passed.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So, looks like our final item tonight is call to the public. And this is the time for the public to comment on any matter that does not appear on the agenda. Commission members may not discuss items not identified on the agenda. And comments are limited to 3 minutes for each person and one subject per night. Okay, and we have Mary Lou Rose. You're up.
Thank you for letting me speak. My name is Mary Lou Rose, and I live in Mountain Gate. We moved to Arizona to enjoy the outdoors. I don't sit with the air conditioning on and my windows closed. I walk 6 miles a day. I walk to Tuzigoot and back, to Lower Clarkdale and back, and I can see what Embry-Riddle is doing to our community. I'm concerned about the amount of low-level repetitive touch-and-go operations from Embry-Riddle. This week, they've been flying starting at 7:15 today, 7:30. There were 5 in pattern a couple times today, which is against the policies we have in effect. I do not understand how a very small number of pilots and planes are able to destroy the use and enjoyment of my property, as well as contribute to the lead pollution in our area. There's 5,000 people in Clarkdale, 12,000 in Cottonwood, and about 8 planes are making our life miserable. The main issue is Embry-Riddle and other flight ground schools. Embry-Riddle promotes on their website they're concerned about the environment. Embry-Riddle states that they have an office of sustainability, but they're not working with us. So what usually happens is we all complain to Embry-Riddle. They send the complaint to Parker Northrop. Parker Northrop sends us a reply that says everyone's in accordance to FAA. We send a complaint to Mr. Tripp. Mr. Tripp responds and says, well, Embry-Riddle's doing everything according to the FAA. However, this continues day after day, minute after minute, hour after hour, day after day. So I'd like to focus on Embry-Riddle. We have a liaison with Embry-Riddle, Parker Northrop. I would suggest and request we get another liaison. He is not working with us. He does not have any concerns with the community. I would suggest we get 2 liaisons from Embry-Riddle, one that would work with the community about everything that's going on and how we're affected by noise and lead, and someone from Embry-Riddle in their Office of Environmental Safety and Sustainability, because they would also have an interest. So that's my request, that we can have another liaison from Embry-Riddle. We can talk about the landing fees, which I think are great. That's going to be years. We can talk about the noise committee, which will be great. But again, it takes a long time. But right now, I would like to suggest we get another liaison from Embry-Riddle that's interested in the community below him. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. We've got a couple more, but they're both on airport noise, which we just had.
Mine was on Embry-Riddle. I put it in my subject on my slip of paper. I didn't put noise. I put Embry-Riddle. She can verify that.
All righty. And you did talk about a lot about noise. David Evans.
Over standby.
Thank you, sir. And Carla Erickson, also talking about airport noise.
This has something else to besides that. I'll address that. I won't repeat anything she said.
Okay. Thank you.
Good evening, commissioners. This is really for Mr. Tripp, and I wrote a note on this. This is about the FAA, and it's every letter we write, we get the same response, and this is in regards to the pilots conducting their maneuvers at the airport. They're saying that the pilots at the airport are actually conducting cross-country and solo flights. That's what they're using this airport for. That is not the case. So I'm trying to get clarification. If the FAA keeps sending me these letters and saying this is what this airport's using, not touch and goes, but specifically, and I have the letter right here that says that they are conducting cross-country and solo flights with instructors. I'm very confused, because that's not what's happening daily in our community. So I don't know if I listen to the FAA or where do you go from here, because that's not what's – I don't see that happening. I won't talk about the noise. I thought it was interesting with the fees. No matter what fee we probably charge ERU, they're going to absorb it. The students will absorb it. So that's kind of a non-brainer right there. But I'm just concerned about what we hear from the FAA does not coincide with what's happening at the airport. So.
Probably after talking to you and explain to you after.
Okay. Thank you.
It's just a level of semantics of what they're telling you. I'll explain to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do you have anything else to come before this board tonight?
Can I make a comment to these people about this?
Now would be the time to do it before I close out. Call the pub.
I've got 60 years as a career in aviation. I started this commission, served as the first chairman. I empathize with your noise problem. I live here too. But there's a lot of things that you can and can't do within the laws and with the FAA and the regulations, et cetera, et cetera. This thing with the noise with Emery Riddle is a PR issue. In fact, I'm going to Daytona Beach and my grandniece is an executive with Emery Riddle.
Really
at corporate. Now, let me finish.
Can't hear you.
How about now?
Yeah.
Okay.
And sir, would you please introduce yourself?
This is really
sir.
A puzzle.
Can you tell us your name, please, for the minutes?
I'm sorry?
Can you tell us your name, please?
My name is Al Gratterjian.
Thank you, sir.
This is a public relations problem. Prescott's a satellite. The university's in Daytona Beach. This is a suggestion. This is what you do when you have a publicity problem. You get all your people together that are raising hell with the city and coming to these things, and you're not going to do any good. You get together. You start making posters up, and you start walking in front of their headquarters in Prescott and call the TV stations in Phoenix to come there and record that. And once they do it, get a copy of the tape and send it to the president, Emery Riddle, in Daytona Beach. You'll get some action.
President Emery Riddle,
descendant of
Parker North. Yeah. Let's try it again. Any other comments to come before the board tonight? Do I hear a motion for adjournment?
I move we adjourn.
That was quick.
Second it.
All in favor?
That's quick.
Aye.
Thank you. Thank you very much.